श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गो गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोपदान की जय। वृंदावन धाम की जय। नवद्वीप धाम की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। तुलसी महारानी की जय। जमुना देवी की जय। गंगा देवी की जय। समवेता भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदे। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Trinada Pi Sunichena Taradiva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Vakivalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra. One more time, please. And one more time, please. Thank you very much. You like the tambora sound? Is it too loud? Just right. All right, tonight we're going to study the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita entitled Karma Yoga. There is three things: karma, vikarma, and akarma. Vikarma means work or actions which violate the laws of nature, the laws of God. There is karma, which means work or action that is in compliance with the laws of God. And then there is akarma. Akarma are actions, but they have no good or bad material reactions. Akarma means transcendental work, spiritual activities. Such akarma is described by Srila Prabhupada in this Bhagavad Gita by various synonyms. Tonight, karma yoga. Earlier in the second chapter, we heard a term used by Krishna, buddhi yoga. And we have also heard bhakti yoga. According to Srila Prabhupada, in this terms of Bhagavad Gita, these three are considered synonyms. So, karma, as soon as the word yoga is used, yoga means to link or connect with the Supreme, to unite with God. So, karma means action or work or activity, and yoga means you connect or link with God. So, let us begin. We will chant the Sanskrit together. We will read the translation. And if there's any inspiration, if I can remember anything, then I will comment as we go along. If you are ready to proceed, then please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All right, text number one. Let's chant together. Arjuna Uvacha Jayasi Chet Karmanaste Mata Buddhir Janardana Tatking Karmani Gore Mang Niyo Jayasi Keshava. Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? So this picks up from the previous chapter. In the previous chapter, Krishna has already told Arjuna that he wants him to fight in this battle, because this Bhagavad Gita began, the scene, the opening scene was the battlefield. Here is the picture right here. Krishna is instructing Arjuna on the chariot, day one of the battle. And we learned in the opening scene that this great warrior, Arjuna, did not want to fight. And he was confused. He was lamenting. But early in chapter 2, he turned to his friend Krishna, his chariot driver, and asked him to become his spiritual teacher, his guru. And that's where Bhagavad Gita begins, with Krishna instructing Arjuna. Now in chapter 2, it seems that Arjuna is still a little confused, because in chapter 2, Krishna told him, I want you to link with the Supreme by means of intelligence. And then, at the same time, Krishna is telling him, and I want you to fight this battle. So Arjuna seems complexed. He continues in the next verse. Vyamishreneva vakena buddhim mohayasiva me tad ekam vada nishchitya yena shreham apnuyam. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be more beneficial for me. So, Arjuna is still surrendered, and he wants his guru to remove the doubts that are in his heart. So let us see what Krishna will respond. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Lokesmin Dvidha Nishta Pura Prokta Mayanaga Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand by empirical, philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. So the key points here, the personality of Godhead. Although the person speaking, his name is Krishna, the author who has included this Bhagavad Gita in his epic work, Mahabharata, doesn't want the reader to misunderstand. Therefore, he puts Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagavan means the topmost authority. That is one way of defining the word Bhagavan. The topmost supreme authority. So that the reader will take the subject matter seriously. Next thing, realize the self. That was introduced in chapter 2. When Krishna began his instructions, the very first lesson was to understand what is the self. And it was decided in 20 verses, the self is not what you see in the mirror. The self is not this body. Neither is it the mind, nor is it the intelligence. The self is the soul, the eternal person dwelling inside the body. And self-realization means to understand who I am eternally. Presently, my situation is a temporary designation. Man, woman, businessman, mother, priest, worker. These are all temporary designations. The man can next time become a woman. And the woman next time can become the man. So these things are temporary designations. But the real you, the real me, and what that is the whole purpose of spiritual life. The whole goal of human existence is to find out who I am. Some of you may remember the story Alice in Wonderland, and the Cheshire Cat said, "Who are you?" Because that's important. Who are you? If you go next door here, we have a Bhagavad Gita museum. And very early, you'll see the scene, and the speaker says, "Who are you?" And it goes through a series. Are you your hand? Are you your face? Are you your legs? And then there's the scene. Baby, youth, teenager, young adult, middle age, and then a little older, till finally death. The cycle. But that's the body. That's not you. So self-realization is to discover, what am I eternally? Krishna says in this verse, two ways. One is by a philosophical process, technically known as neti-neti. The person inquiring into self-realization comes to discern what is eternal and what is temporary. Anything that's temporary, that's not the self. That which is eternal, that's the self. So you come to a negative definition. Then Krishna said, but others realize the self by devotional service. And as I said, that either means karma yoga, buddhi yoga, or bhakti yoga. Let us continue. The next section, verses 4 through 8, the subject matter is false renunciation. If you're ready to continue, then please chant along with me and say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nakarmana manarambhan naishkarmyam purushoshnute nacha sanyasanad eva siddhing samadhi gachyati. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Here, the topmost authority, Krishna, is dispelling a very common and general misunderstanding. Many people throughout the ages have wrongly concluded that the way to become liberated is thus to stop work altogether. They think that if I renounce everything, now I'll become free. Here, Krishna does not approve of such a decision. That was Arjuna's position in the beginning. Arjuna did not want to fight the battle, and he was going to shirk his responsibility and go off to the forest and become a holy man. He wanted to run away from the battle. But here Krishna is saying, nope, just by giving up your work, you will not achieve perfection. Krishna continues, Nahi kaschit chanam api jatu tishyat yakarma krit karyate hi yavashak karma sarva prakriti jairagunai. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So this is why Krishna did not like anyone who subscribed to the previous verse. Because the soul by nature is active. That is, how shall we say? The soul is eternal. The soul by nature is eternally active. Whether it's in the liberated or the conditioned state. Right now we're in the conditioned state. We're in the prison life. What is the prison? We have a material body. We are limited. We are confined. We are prisoners to higher and greater degrees. When you have an animal body, you're still the soul, but your freedom and your expression of consciousness is very limited. When you have a human body, you have a sufficient amount of freedom and ability to express your desires. If you get higher grade bodies like demigods and bodies of rishis and sages, you have an even more greater facility to exercise freedom and desires. But in either case, whether you're a demigod, a human, or animal, or lower, you're still a prisoner because you have this confinement of a material body. Even if you achieve liberation in the spiritual world, still the soul by nature will want to act. Now in this verse, Krishna is saying that each and every one of us has acquired a particular nature. And that nature is dictated by the modes of nature. What are those modes? Goodness, passion, ignorance. Each and every one of us is a different combination and permutation of these three modes. Some of us have more mode of goodness. Some of us have more passion. Some of us have more ignorance. These qualities we inherited because of our previous decisions, because of our previous choices, because of our previous actions. So therefore, when I look at my life, when I see what kind of life and what circumstances were put before me in my life, I understand all this was because of the choices and desires I had in the previous life. Therefore, I don't blame anybody. I blame myself. When my life is not going good, when I find myself in predicament after predicament, I don't blame anybody. I blame myself. I am in this situation because a long time ago, I made a certain choice. I had a certain desire. Now in this life, Krishna says, this is what you wanted. Do you like it now? I still have free will. I still have free will. I can choose not to act. Free will is always there. But the chessboard that's set up before me, that was previously designed. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Even when you're sleeping in your bed, what's active? The mind, the intelligence. That's how you have dreams. Anyone who has seen the movie Inception was all about dreams and how you can manipulate your dreams. And they had a very interesting concept which leads me to believe they must have read something of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because they had the dream within the dream within the dream. That's what we're doing. We're doing the same thing. Therefore, I don't call the movie Inception. I call it Deception. This process of Karma Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, Bhakti Yoga is how you wake up from the dream. There's one song we sing. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Goda Channa Bole, Hota Nidra Jao Maya, Pishachira Kole. Lord Chaitanya is calling out, wake up, wake up. He's not talking just about somebody sleeping. We're sleeping now. We are in the dream within the dream. But how to wake up? I'm already awake. Yes. Therefore, this process of Krishna consciousness is how you wake up. Therefore, we chant, everybody, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Let's go to text number 6. You have your book? You need your book, Bhakta Oscar G. All right. Text number 6. 1 second, please. Three, six. Karmendriyani Sanyamya Yaaste Manasasmaran Indriyartan vimudhatma mitya achara sa uchyate. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So, Krishna here again is talking about somebody who wants to refrain from action, refrain from prescribed duties, and he thinks that that is how I will achieve my freedom. But the problem is, the mind is still dwelling on how to enjoy this material world. Devotees know this. When a big fast day comes, I don't know about you, but all I'm thinking about, when are we going to eat? You look at your watch and it's only 11 o'clock. Man, it feels like I've been fasting for 12 years or more. It's only 11 o'clock. Then after a while, you look at the clock, you watch again. What? It's only 11:05? And as the day wears on, that hour when you can break the fast seems like, oh, I can't last, I can't make it. All you're thinking about is when I can break the fast. Sometimes a person will deny himself a certain pleasure, but meanwhile is thinking, the day will come when I can enjoy. So, this is not spiritual life, to be a pretender. That externally, I present myself as a renunciant, but actually in my heart, I am simply planning and meditating how I can enjoy. So one should not be a pretender. One should be actually renounced. One should actually be a sincere devotee. Let us go on. Text number 7. Yastvindriyani manasa niyamya rabhartirjuna karmendriyai karma yogam asakta savishishyate. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So throughout Bhagavad Gita, you will see that Krishna poses negative and positive conclusions. He doesn't leave you out there hanging. If Krishna proposes the wrong thing, he will definitely always propose the right thing. So here he says, on the other hand, meaning therefore, as opposed, the real thing. So here is verse number 7. Here is the solution. Here is karma yoga. Here is Krishna consciousness. Yes, you have to control your active senses. You have your hands, you have your legs, your eyes, your ears, your nose, tongue, skin. You have these senses, and they should be controlled. How? By the mind. We discussed this last week. We discussed this, that the senses are sometimes compared to wild horses. The wild horse just wants to run. So our senses are such, all the senses are like wild horses, and they're pulling us in so many directions. So how do you control a wild horse? You pull on the bridle. Because a horse is controlled by its mouth. When Krishna fought the Keshi demon, Krishna controlled the Keshi demon, sticking his arm in the mouth of the horse. Because Krishna knew, you control the horse by the mouth. So the reins is your mind. Your mind pulls back on those wild horses. There's another example to understand how these senses are wild. It is like a man who comes home to 6 wives. Anyone who's been married. One wife, as soon as you come home, all right, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. So you can imagine 6 wives. So 6 wives means that one wife is pulling in this direction. One wife say, no, come here. Then one has the leg, one has the ear. So the senses are like six wives. The eyes are saying, come, let's look. The ears are saying, no, let's do this. The tongue is saying, but what about me, me, me? And the sense of touch, what about me? All the sense, the nose, what about me? That's the condition we find ourselves. If the senses are uncontrolled, how you can be happy? How can a man be happy being pulled in six different directions? That's what our position is. These senses are pulling us constantly. There's no release. They're constantly. Therefore, the mind has to be strong. Pull back. So, the question then becomes, how do you strengthen the mind? How does the mind become strengthened? The mind becomes strengthened. What does Lord Chaitanya say? Cheto dharpana marginam. Cleanse the mind. You cleanse the mind by chanting the Maha Mantra. Everybody. That is how you strengthen the mind. And the mind also becomes strengthened when you study Bhagavad Gita. So right now, you're strengthening your mind. That is why it is very good to come to this class. Because you're building strong mind. When the mind is strong, the senses will not get out of control. That is how you will be happy. And begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment. Without attachment means that I'm doing this to please Krishna. I'm doing this and I don't have any expectation of a business deal. When I was a young boy, I used to make deals with Jesus and God. I would pray, Jesus, get me this and I'll do this. And it worked many times. I had a good deal going. But as I got older, the deals weren't coming through. So then, when I came to Krishna consciousness, then I got a broader perspective. I learned why God does not necessarily fulfill my desires. He does that because He considers whether or not that thing that you're asking for is actually good. So we execute Krishna consciousness without attachment. No expectation. No business deal. I'm doing this because it is pleasing to Krishna. Attachment means I should be attached to Krishna's satisfaction, not my own. I may do this thing for Krishna. I may like it or may not like it. I should not be attached to the result. And I should not be attached to, oh, I don't like to do this. No. I should do what I'm supposed to do because I'm supposed to do it. No other reason. Okay, let's finish up the last verse in this section. Verse number 8. Niyatang kuru karma twang karma jayo hiya karmana sharira yatra pichate na prasyad akarmana. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So here's another misconception people have. Some people think spiritual life is lazy life. Some people think, oh, Spiritual life means I don't have to do anything. I just have to walk around and be spiritual. That's what some people think. In fact, many people think we devotees, Hare Krishnas, they think all we do all day is chant. And sometimes they complain. Why don't you do something? For instance, in the early days of my Krishna conscious life, we would go out on the street for hours on end chanting, and you would always hear this, I'll get a job. Why don't you guys do something? That spiritual life is for lazy people who can't do anything. No, that's not spiritual life. Perform your prescribed duty. Everyone has a prescribed duty. Your child, this is your child. She has a prescribed duty. That prescribed duty is to do what you say. It's for her own good, is it not? If she does her prescribed duty, she is going to be very happy. So, for a child, the prescribed duty, obey the parents, listen to the teacher. The prescribed duty, here we have my friend Bhakta Askar. He is living in the ashram. His prescribed duty is to do what the temple management and the temple authorities ask him to do. And I'm sure you are doing. Yes. Are you happy doing your prescribed duty? Good. If you are a householder, family, you have obligations. You have to go to work. You have to put food on the table. That is your prescribed duty. Everyone has a prescribed duty. The husband, prescribed duty, take care of the wife and children. Krishna, the night of the Rasa dance, told the gopis, the highest prescribed duty for a woman, obey the husband, take care of the children. Everybody has a prescribed duty. If we do our prescribed duties, Krishna said, that is better. Because even you want to just be healthy, even you don't want to get sick, you should do your prescribed duty. So this is the subject matter of this particular section of Bhagavad Gita. Next week, we will study another section called the cycle of sacrifice. Before we take questions, we will do a short bhajan. So everyone can just chant japa until I get my musicians lined up here. I have all my musicians in this iPod. Yes, Hari Bol. I like that too. All right.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jana Vallava Girivara Hari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Govijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Govijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yasoda Nandana Raja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Adava Kunja Bihari. Govijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Govijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yasoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Tira Vanachari.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One more time. One more time. So, any questions? Any questions? Questions? Yes, sir. Okay, so first of all, you are in a different category. You are a devotee. So your material, quote unquote, prescribed duty is secondary to your duty to become Krishna conscious. That you should always remember. You're in a different category. If you were not a devotee, I would answer this question differently. But since you are a devotee, your varna or occupational activity is subordinate to your self-realization. So, the particular job that you do you now realize is jeopardizing your spiritual life. Now, you must take advantage of everything you've learned so far and use your intelligence so that your spiritual life is not hampered. Because for you, you only need to do so much work in the material plane to keep body and soul together. You're not living to get a big house, right? Big bank balance. No. You're simply working so that you can keep body and soul together, and your decisions should be based on what kind of work should I do so that I can maximize hearing and chanting. So, you can do anything. A devotee has that freedom. A devotee can work as a sudra, can work as a kshatriya, vaishya, brahmin, because that's on the material plane. And the thought is, whatever decision I make, how is it going to affect my spiritual life? That is the decision. I used to get this question all the time. You have to use your intelligence because you said it's starting to affect. So right there, that's a sign from Krishna that something's got to give. Whatever it is you have to use, you have learned so many things. Now, apply everything that you've learned and make sure whatever decision you make does not decrease your hearing and chanting. As I was saying, I get this question all the time from people. Should I take this job? Should I take this job? Should I go to Minneapolis? Should I go here? The answer is, this decision that you make, is it going to increase or decrease your devotional service? Once that's decided, same way, here, let's say, here's Bhakta Oscar. Bhakta Oscar is a happy-go-lucky brahmachari, yes? Now the day may come, I don't know. Where's my bell? The day may come when he sees, for my spiritual life, it would be better if I got married. That may come. I'm not saying it will, but if it's like me, how old are you? Oh, 19. You're just a baby. When I joined the temple, I was 23. I was thinking, yeah, within 3 years I'll be sannyas. Narantara Maharaj. But it soon dawned on me, Narantara, you're no sannyasi. So, I made the decision to enter household ashram, and that was good because it has not hampered my spiritual life and it has opened up unlimited opportunities for preaching. So you make your decisions based on how is it going to further my spiritual life. Fair enough? Question, sir? Question? Anybody else have a question? No more questions? All right. Let's see. What do I have? We have a few minutes left. Let's find something nice to hear. All right. Ah, yes. Something I found today. So this is a treat. This is a special treat. So, I am particularly reading this particular little excerpt. I have one student in Santiago. And so, for Sammohini, this is a special little gift from me to you. So in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is instructing Maharaj Yudhisthira. And there's one, the final chapter is entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. And there are many topics discussed by Narada in that chapter. So there's one section called the Five Branches of Irreligion. So I found this today. I mean, I found it a long time ago, but I rediscovered it today. So this is a short little section, the Five Branches of Irreligion. Narada said, there are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion, vidharma, religious principles for which one is unfit, paradharma, pretentious religion, abhas, a new type of religion, upadharma, and cheating religion, chala dharma. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon these five as irreligious. Now for us, because we accept Bhagavad Gita, we know that Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, give up all varieties of religion, what to speak of irreligion, just have to do one thing, surrender to me, Krishna says. That's all. So that's why I was saying, you have surrendered to Krishna. That's the only thing you have to worry about. Stay surrendered to Krishna. Okay, now Narada will go into a little more detail. Religious principles are called Vidharma when they obstruct one from following his or her own religion. That's what I was emphasizing to you. You should not do anything that is going to decrease your hearing and chanting. Exactly. Very good. Religious principles are called paradharma when they are introduced by others. So we get our religion from Bhagavad Gita, from Krishna and his representatives. Somebody wants to tell us something, we do what Krishna says. For me, I'll take it a step further. I do what Prabhupada says. I don't care about this guy, this Baba, this Swami, this Sadhu. No. What does Prabhupada say? That's what I do. Boss finished. A new type of religion is called Upadharma when it is created by someone who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas. Interpretation by one's jugglery of words is called Chala Dharma. A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his or her order of life is called abhas, a dim reflection or false similarity. Now Narada finishes up. But if one performs the prescribed duties for his or her particular ashram or varna, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? So simply execute your Krishna conscious activities. Where is the name of that book? Chant. And I put on the subtext whether you like it or not. So let us chant and be happy.